Good afternoon. This is Marco. You're listening to Astro Talk on 101.9. Strange thing happened. I went to my Astro Talk file and all my files have disappeared. So I can't play any music, cannot play introductions, things like that. So I don't know where they went. Everything's gone. So hopefully we can find it. So I apologize for that. Welcome. This is December the 1st, and last night I was lying in bed in a nice, looked like a star, might have been a planet, was out in the sky. It was nice and bright. The clouds had moved, so I thought of taking out my telescope, but it's not so easy anymore. When I was first had the telescope, it's so easy to take it out because you're so excited. And then you got to put everything together and position it and spot the thing you want to see. So I was just too lazy, but I don't think it was a planet because it wasn't shining brightly enough, but it was pretty big. It was pretty shiny. So I try to look at the constellations. I haven't done that in a long time, but it was about 5 o'clock in the morning. It was in the eastern sky, a bit towards the south, but more eastern, and just couldn't tell what it was. But anyway, welcome. As I said, all my files have been erased. I don't know. They jumped somewhere else. I'm not sure where they are. So I look and there's no Astro Talk. So that's strange. There's a file here that contains all the shows and mine is not there now. So that's very strange. Okay, I'll look for it later. So I was looking at the thing last night at the star. I didn't know what it was and I can't tell anything about it. So I'll start reading some articles I just took off the NASA website. I always go to NASA's website, www.nasa.gov. A lot of interesting thing, but not many news stories this week. So I'm going to go with one dated November 16th. And what's that? Today is the... That was 2 weeks ago. So I don't know why I'm not finding any news stories on the NASA website. So that's very strange. I found some stories that I talked about last week. But here's an interesting story. How about space food bars? We all know we have granola bars. Well, NASA's making similar space food bars. So if astronauts go to Mars, which will be maybe 2030, 2035, but that's 14 years from now, but they're still working on it. So the caption is space food bars will keep Orion weight off and crew weight on. So Orion is the spacecraft. They're going to fly to Mars. Hopefully it'll be Orion. But Orion was built, designed a few years ago. And if they go to 2030, they'll be using a spacecraft design. It's 25 years old. But anyway, that's how it goes. So the caption or the title is Space Food Bars Will Keep Orion Weight Off and Crew Weight On. So what does that mean? It won't be too heavy, so it won't weigh down the spacecraft, but it'll be heavy enough to give them food. So now this is Orion backstage as a picture. There's two nice ladies, food scientist Takiya Simmons and Orion's deputy health and medical technical authority Jessica Vaz talk about the food bars. So they have food bars and they're going to talk about them in their video, but I'm not going to play the video. So there's a little photo down a bit, and I'm going to read that. There's a caption behind, below the photo. To help reduce the amount of supplies Orion will carry for its crew, scientists are developing a variety of food bars that astronauts can eat for breakfast during their space flight missions. It looks like birdseed pressed into a bar, into a granola bar. So I'll read the article now. When astronauts in the Orion spacecraft, and again, if you want to go to Orion, let's see, there is a link, www.nasa.gov/exploration/systems/orion/index.html. It talks about the Orion spacecraft, but they're testing it now, and of course, if they go in 2030, this is the spacecraft they'll use. So they'll use, sounds strange, isn't it? It might not. The technology might have been, will surely have been surpassed. But anyway, when astronauts in the Orion spacecraft travel beyond the moon to explore deep space destinations, they'll need a robust diet to keep them healthy and sharp. while crew members aboard the International Space Station can choose from approximately 200 items for their meals and have the space to stow an array of options. Feeding the crew on deep space missions presents several unique challenges that NASA scientists are working to tackle. So yes, that's going to be strange. We take for granted things like everyday functions we do and the food we eat, but then when a long-range space mission is out there, then it's going to take a whole new different set or mindsets to tackle the problems, simple problems that we take for granted. So again, I believe the Orion spacecraft will first, when it goes to Mars, like the moon landings, the spacecraft might approach Mars, circle Mars, orbit Mars, so there might be astronauts on board. They might not land on Mars. They might go all the way to Mars without landing on it. So that would be interesting, wouldn't it? So I'm going to get back to the article. Orion has limited room inside to accommodate the supplies and food astronauts. To accommodate the supply and food astronauts will need during their missions, because flights to deep space will not rely on resupply spacecraft to deliver what astronauts need and dispose of trash like the International Space Station does. The Orion crew will have to take everything they need with them and bring it all back home. Given the distances Orion will travel, teams also must limit Orion's mass, since a heavier spacecraft requires more fuel and energy to propel it to its ultimate destination. So let's say they have a crew of five, and they want to go to Mars. Imagine all the background details that are just, we think they're minor, but they're not. The food is obviously one of the major ones. So how will they keep enough food for a few years mission? That's really a big thing to tackle, isn't it? Of course, they could grow things, but that could be limited. So I'm going to get back. To help reduce the amount of supplies Orion will carry for its crew, scientists are developing a variety of food bars that astronauts can eat for breakfast during their spaceflight missions. So this is only breakfast, imagine that. In the United States, it's common for people to substitute an energy bar or shake for breakfast, or to skip the meal altogether. Food scientists determined that developing a single calorically dense breakfast substitute can help meet mass reduction requirements. Now I'm going to quote somebody. Her name is Jessica Voss, and she's the medical and technical authority, or Orion's deputy health and medical technical authority. And quote, when you have 700 to 900 calories of something, it's going to have some mass regardless of what shape it's in. So we've taken a look at how to get some mass savings by reducing how we're packaging and stowing what the crew would eat for breakfast for early Orion flights with crew, said Jessica Voss, Deputy Health and Medical Technical Authority for Orion. When you think about multi-week missions in Orion, having just one package for breakfast items for crew will help us limit the space we need to store them. On the space station, crew members often pull their desired breakfast from a range of options available and may eat items from multiple thermostabilized or rehydratable packages. Thermostabilized foods are heat processed to destroy harmful microorganisms and enzymes, while rehydratable foods have their water content removed before flight to save weight and then added back in before they are consumed. On Orion, the goal is to have a number of food bars to select from in a variety of flavors, like orange, cranberry, or barbecue nut for their first meal of the day, reducing the amount of space and storage the breakfast require. For lunch and dinner, Orion astronauts will be able to select from similar space items station crews members eat and have a food warmer to help them prepare their meals. Now, wouldn't that be cool if we went to Mars and we landed and then there were aliens there and we said, hey, why not? Do you want to have a taste of my breakfast food bar? That would be a great way to make friends, wouldn't it? To give somebody food. Imagine if we met an Ewok on Mars. We can give them a space bar. That would be cool, wouldn't it? But designing a food bar to a specific nutritional balance for astronauts while also increasing caloric density and passing the taste test is no small task. So says Takiya Simmons, a food scientist with the Advanced Food Technology Team at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston, and quote, "There's no commercially available bar right now that meets our needs. So we've had to go design something that will work for the crew while trying to achieve a multi-year shelf life." So this lady, Takiya Simmons, she works at NASA's Johnson Space Center in Houston. I was there in 1987. So that was almost 30 years ago. When I was there, it was so cool. They toured you around in the little buggy. You saw a lot of exhibits, and it was all free. And there was one tour that cost $5. But when I went to Florida lately, it costs like $100 now. So I bet Houston Space Center costs $100. But you should definitely go see it. It's worth a visit. Now back to the article. Scientists also have to consider how the bars will affect crew morale, since food choice, variety, and taste are important aspects of ensuring they consume enough, especially as mission lengths increase. The food bars, which are being developed in coordination with NASA's Human Research Program, have been tested by crew members inside HERA, HERA, the agency's three-story habitat at Johnson Space Center, designed to serve as an analog for the isolation and remote conditions in exploration scenarios. The ground-based missions have provided helpful feedback on the flavor, texture, and long-term acceptability of the bars that food scientists are using to hone the range of options available. The missions will ultimately help NASA determine the right meal replacement schedule to prevent food fatigue and aversion on long-duration missions. You know one way they can test this? They can tell the astronauts, bring this home, force them to eat it here, see how they react. They'll probably start to complain. Oh my gosh, we have to eat this stuff? Now imagine what it would be like on a long space mission. Now back to the article. While scientists continue to hone the food bars and expand the variety of options available, NASA also is working to develop regenerative ways to feed the crew on longer missions, including on the journey to Mars. The Space Station Vegetable Production System is helping to determine how to regularly grow fresh vegetables in space. An obvious target. Astronaut Shane Kimbrough recently started the third such investigation aboard the Orbital Laboratory. Or is it laboratory? Anyway. Scientists are also looking at packaging food items to keep them edible and nutritious in conditions where there are temperature fluctuations, such as the surface of Mars. Orion's first mission with crew will launch as early as 2021 atop the powerful Space Launch System rocket currently in development. The flight will help set the stage for future missions in providing improving ground around and beyond the moon, where NASA will refine the technologies and operations needed to send astronauts to Mars. Okay, so as I said, somehow my file is missing. All my programs, all my music, they're all gone. So I'm going to play a station break. And when I come back, I'm going to go to another article. So thank you for listening. I'm trying to find a long enough one here. Where's one? 43 seconds. Okay, this is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk on 101.9. Again, I'll just start over again.
Here at CITR Radio, we value your letters and feedback.
Dear Freddy Grisewood, Bagshot, sir, I am nearly 60 and I'm quite mad, but I do enjoy listening. If this continues to go on unabated, Dunkirk, Dark Days of the War, Backs to the Wall, Alva Liddell, Berlin Airlift, Moral Upheaval, A Perfume Case, Young Hippies, Roaming the Streets, Raping, Looting, and Killing. Yours, etc., Brigadier Arthur Gormanstroff, Mrs.
CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, facilitating moral upheaval since 1989.
This is my life. I I wake up in the morning, I eat, I sleep, I shit.
Breakfast with the Browns.
So whatever it is, but I never shut it off for 5 minutes.
I can't wait to impress my friends with my astounding knowledge of cool.
Join your favorite Brownsters and tune in and listen to the best selection of down-tempo electropop lounge core.
Strictly Squaresville.
Remember, subtle, basic, brown.
Breakfast with the Browns
on CITR 101.9 FM every Monday morning
from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m.
The older I get, the more life starts to make sense, and the less I care.
Now we're riding the rainbow across the sea, and we're making it like hell. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're making it like you. Now we're riding the rainbow to Cloudsville, and we're...
You know, you can give 100 examples of what it isn't, but you, man, you're going to have a hell of a time saying what it is.
Welcome back. This is Marco on Astro Talk. So, as I said, I apologize that I don't have my files. They've all disappeared, so I can't play some of the show I wanted to play today. So now I will go to another article, and this is dated November 21st. So for some reason, as I said, the NASA articles are usually very current. There's always something every day. Today there wasn't much, so I'm going to one dated November 21st, 2016, of course, and it says a stellar circle of light. There's a nice photo of a small cloud of dust and gas containing a new star being formed about 20,000 light years from Earth. Now, there's a place to travel 20,000 light years from Earth. Wouldn't that be cool if we could instantaneously transport ourselves to some other place in the universe? Like this place, 20,000 light years away. Imagine if we can actually configure wormholes so we can move through them. That would be cool, wouldn't it? Okay, so this is an article, and it's about stars, and it says, the title is A Stellar Circle of Light, A Stellar Circle of Life, dated November 21st, on www.nasa.gov. I'll read the article now. A snapshot of the stellar life cycle has been captured in a new portrait from NASA's Chandra X-ray Observatory and the Smithsonian's submillimeter array called SMA. A cloud that is giving birth to stars have been observed to reflect X-rays from Cygnus X3, a source of X-rays produced by a system where a massive star is slowly being eaten by its companion black hole or neutron star. This discovery provides a new way to study how stars form. In 2003, about 13 years ago, astronauts using Chandra's high-resolution X-ray vision to find a mysterious source of X-ray emission located very close to Cygnus X3. The separation of these two sources in the sky is equivalent to the width of a penny at a distance of 830 feet away. In 2013, astronomers reported that the new source is a cloud of gas and dust. So now I'm going to go to the picture. There's a little picture, and it says, jet directed towards us, the little friend, jet directed away from us, and Cygnus X3. So there's the X-ray source called Cygnus X3, and there's another blue picture a bit away from it, said jet directed towards us, and a red one, jet directed away from us, and it's something called little friend. So I'll read the caption and see what it says. Cygnus X3 is an X-ray binary where a compact source is pulling material away from a massive companion star. Chandra's high-resolution X-ray vision revealed a cloud of gas and dust that is separated by a very small distance from Cygnus X3. This gas cloud, dubbed the Little Friend, is a Bach globule, the first ever detected in X-rays and the most distant one ever discovered. Astronomers detected jets produced by the Little Friend, showing that a star is forming inside it. I'm trying to remember what a Bach globule is. I read about it a while ago. Maybe I'll get back to that next time. Okay, so now I'm going to get back to the article. So they found an X-ray source that's producing a jet directed away towards us. So that means the light is coming towards us, so it would shift to the blue. And that's what happens, called a redshift. And the jet that's directed away from us is red, it's called a redshift. So when something is directed away from us, the wavelength shift to the red, they become longer. When something is coming towards us, they shift to the blue and they become shorter. So that's how we can tell if they're coming away or going away or coming towards us. In astronomical terms, the little friend, what they call this cloud of something, gas and dust that's lighted up, it's called the little friend. The cloud is rather small, about 0.7 light years in diameter. Yeah, very small, right? Astronomers realized that this cloud was acting as a mirror, reflecting some of the X-rays generated by Cygnus X-3 towards Earth. And so says Michael McCullough of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, Massachusetts. And quote, "We nicknamed this object the little friend because it is a faint source of X-rays next to a very bright source that showed similar X-ray variations. The Chandra observations reported in 2013 suggested that the little friend had a mass between 2 and 24 times that of the sun. This suggested that the cloud was a Bok globule, so Bok is capital B-O-K, a small dense cloud where infant stars can be born. However, more evidence was needed." Sounds like something from Star Wars, Bok globule. "To determine the nature of the little friend," that's a cute name, isn't it? The little friend. Astronomers use the SMA, which is the Smithsonian Submillimeter Array, a series of 8 radio dishes atop Mauna Kea in Hawaii. The SMA found molecules of carbon monoxide, an important clue that the little friend is indeed a Bok globule. Also, the SMA data reveals the presence of a jet or outflow within the little friend, an indication that a star has started to form inside. Isn't that interesting? That would be on a time scale of billions of years for this star, or hundreds of thousands of years at least, and all they're taking is little snapshots in time. So says co-author Leah Corrales of the Massachusetts Institute of Technology in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and quote, "Typically, astronauts study Bok globules by looking at the visible light they block or the radio emissions they produce. With a little friend, we can examine this interstellar cocoon in a new way using X-rays, the first time we have ever been able to do this with a Bok globule." Interesting how there's so much stuff going on in astronomy. This is not in the news very much, stuff like this, and there's all kinds of experiments like these types of experiments going on. Very fascinating field. At an estimated distance of almost 20,000 light years from Earth, the little friend is also the most distant Bok globule yet seen. The properties of Cygnus X-3 and its proximity to the little friend also give an opportunity to make a precise distance measurement, something that is very often difficult in astronomy. Since the early 1970s, astronomers have observed a regular 4.8-hour variation in the X-rays from Cygnus X-3. The little friend, acting as an X-ray mirror, shows the same variation, but slightly delayed because the path the reflected X-rays take is longer than a straight line from Cygnus X-3 to Earth. By measuring the delay time in the periodic variation between Cygnus X-3 and the little friend, astronomers were able to calculate the distance from Earth to Cygnus X-3 of about 24,000 light years. It's always nice to have a little friend, isn't it? Because Cygnus X-3 contains a massive short-lived star, scientists think it must have originated in a region of the galaxy where stars are still likely to be forming. These regions are only found in the Milky Way spiral arms. However, Cygnus X-3 is located outside of the Milky Way spiral arms. So closer to the center of our galaxy, where we have this giant black hole, a lot of older stars, there's not much star birth. It's all in the arms, isn't it? Outside. So says another astronomer, Michael Dunham of the State University of New York at Fredonia, and quote, "In some ways, it's a surprise that we find Cygnus X-3 where we do. realized something rather unusual needed to happen during its early years to send it out on a wild ride. The researchers suggest that the supernova explosion that formed either the black hole neutron star and Cygnus X-3 kicked the binary system away from its original birthplace. Assuming that Cygnus X-3 and the little friend formed near each other, they estimate that Cygnus X-3 must have been thrown out at speeds between 400,000 and 2 million miles per hour. It's pretty fast. I think the solar wind comes at us about 1 million miles per hour, so those are all pretty quick. A paper describing these results appeared in a recent issue of the Astrophysical Journal Letters and is available online. Thank you for listening. Hopefully next week I will have my files back. As I said, my files disappeared. They're all gone. I can't play any music or anything else. So thank you for listening. This is Marco. You've been listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.